And we start today with a different managerial approach than what you're used to. My guest is Damon Beyer, and he is co-author of a book called The Right Fight, How Great Leaders Use Healthy Conflict to Drive Performance, Innovation, and Value. Damon, welcome to the program. Nice to have you with me today.
Thanks so much.
Most managers are used to what I have heard called the kumbaya approach, where you want to get everybody on the same page, everybody's on the team, everybody's on board with every project, working together. And your book is kind of the antithesis of that. Why do you think that this different approach is workable?
Well, there's nothing wrong with alignment, which is what you're talking about when you talk kumbaya. It's very important, it's necessary, and you absolutely need it. The problem with alignment is it won't necessarily get you performance. What I found in my work and in doing the research for this book was that, you know, really great leaders, particularly in today's complex environment where things move really, really quickly, have to also sort of have a complementary skill set of using tension and introducing purposefully conflict into their organizations in order to get things done.
The concept of purposefully introducing conflict might just really seem kind of foreign to the idea of what most managers do and how they've been taught and trained to run a team. Why is that so critical, and how do you start to do that? How do you sit down and decide, I'm going to try to introduce conflict into a particular project or a particular environment?
Well, and it's certainly not a tool that I would suggest you use for every situation in every sort of circumstance, because there are a lot of really wrong fights out there in the world. It's one of the reasons why people don't like the idea of conflict in the workplace. But there are certain situations that are just important enough or big enough where it's really important to have multiple points of view and real diverse opinion on the table so you can make the best possible decision. And in those circumstances, unless you can orchestrate, you know, hearing lots of different sides of the equation, it's really hard to make a good decision.
So the idea of conflict is almost, what I got from reading this book, is almost a competition of ideas. You're proposing that people try to artfully manage different groups of people working not against each other, headed toward the same goal, but with decidedly different ways to get there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's, you know, it really shouldn't be personal, and it really shouldn't be based on position. It really ought to be totally based on letting the best ideas win. And, you know, oftentimes what you find is that it's letting the combination of the best ideas win.
Well, one thing that you write about in this book that's been a thread of all the managerial topics that I've talked to people about since I've done this show is trust and the basis of trust. And what do you think, based on the research that you've done and the work that you've put into this book, what are the things that a manager should be working on in his or her own life to give his team or her team a sense that I can trust the person who's at the top of this organization to, first of all, lead us in the right direction, and second of all, to treat me the way that I want to be treated to be a contributing member of this team?
Well, a couple of things on that theme that you know, may be surprising from the research that we've done, but, you know, a lot of people think about trust in a very simplistic way, which is sort of personally, I trust you, I've got your back, I know what you'll do, you know, I've worked with you for a long, long time, and that's very important. We want that kind of level of personal trust to be high in organizations, but that doesn't mean that, for example, I trust you to do everything. So, for example, if you and I have worked together on, we're consultants or something like that, which is what I do, doesn't mean I'm going to let you fly an airplane with me in it to New York if you don't have a pilot's license,
mm-hmm.
right? So, you know, sometimes trust is based on expertise, and sometimes trust is based on personal relationships. But what we really got to when we were researching The Right Fight is that sometimes trust is also based on position. It's what we call the idea of structural trust, where you'll have different agendas. So if you take any sort of typical situation where the head of finance and the head of sales are trying to decide the next year's sales quota in a typical organization, I can guarantee you how that argument's going to go. And it is not going to go in such a way that the head of finance is arguing for the number to be low and the head of sales is arguing for the number to be high, right? And those sort of structural positions get created because of the roles you're asking those folks to play. And once we understood that, you know, sometimes trust is just a function of the role that you're playing in an organization, we really understood that that's a tool that leaders can can use in order to get multiple opinions on the table and get the best answers out there possible. You know, it's what allows people to lower cost and improve service. It's what allows people to come up with the best possible numbers instead of just the first things that they come up with when they're trying to hit targets and make things happen.
So we're kind of going to the idea of leadership by example, because your point is very well taken. I'm sure you're a terrific guy, but I would prefer that you didn't do LASIK surgery on my eyes. You've written a great book, but I'm not sure you're an eye surgeon. So I wouldn't trust you to do that. What do you think I need to do if I'm a manager sitting at my desk and I'm saying, I want to make sure that the folks that are below me understand that I am a good manager, I have their interests at heart, and I have fulfilling the mission of our organization at heart. The best thing, I guess, is the lead by example model. Is that a good? I imagine that's a great place to start, at least.
Well, that's certainly a good place to start. But the one thing that, you know, we're telling leaders through this work and through the work that we've been doing since we wrote the book, which we put to paper about 7 months ago, is that, you know, the idea that leaders sometimes don't understand is they have a certain amount of relationship capital in the business, which is basically the amount of influence that they can exert. And this is not only true for senior leaders, which sometimes is just positional, but it's also very true in the middle of the hierarchy. Fascinatingly, you know, people oftentimes think relationship capital is related to being nice. But if you actually look at the research, people who are nice managers, the folks who bring in cookies and, you know, all that kind of stuff like that, actually sometimes have very low levels of relationship capital because they're pushovers. And people who are nasty managers, the folks that are always sort of, you know, stabbing you in the back or, you know, have personal agendas or that you can't, you know, also have very low levels of relationship capital. But people who have high levels of relationship capital are generally known for two things. The first of which is that when it comes to something that really matters, they will go to bat. They will push back. They will argue. They will fight. They will engage in the conflict. They will not let things go when it's something that's important to their organization or their ideas or their values or something that's there. So it's highly correlated with this ability to put the conflict out on the table, not have it be subterranean, but have it just really be there. The second thing that correlates to this degree of relationship capital is the ability to really push people to accomplish things that they might not think that they could accomplish. You know, really great leaders have sort of not only leading by example, but they have a never empty, never full sort of attitude. And they know for each of their individuals what they can do to sort of up the bar every single day. And it's those kind of leaders that people really enjoy working for. You know, it's not the nice manager or the nasty manager that people get respect. It's the folks that are very demanding, that will go to bat for the important things, and know how to structure it in a way that, you know, both sides can sort of play and it ends up being fair and all sides are heard, even if there are winners and losers.
Damon Byers, a senior executive advisor with Booz & Company and co-author of the book, The Right Fight, and the website for this book is rightfightbook.com. We'll have it linked up on the in-depth page on federalnewsradio.com later this afternoon. What in your practice, Damon, led you to the conclusion that this, first of all, was something that was a hypothesis that you had demonstrated was worthy of a book, and then second of all, led you to think that there was going to be a demand for a book like this? Because as you say in the first chapter, it's kind of contrary to what most people think when they think about managerial style.
Well, when my co-author and I sort of first met, we were having dinner down in Houston, actually, and we were talking about leaders that we really had worked with that we admired and respected. And, you know, people like Charlie Feld, who's in the book, and people like Doug Conant, who's in the book, and you know, folks that we'd worked with even from afar, Patty Stonecipher at Microsoft, which Sajna Kulch and I had worked with. And we had the idea that what we really admired about these people was that they handled complexity in a way that was just absolutely amazing. They could deal with all kinds of moving pieces. And then when we thought about it a bit, and we dug underneath the surface, and we actually went and talked to them about what they were doing, we realized that it wasn't just complexity management. Actually, what they were really, really good at was using tension as a lever. And it was funny because in the course of the conversations and the interviews that we did with senior executives, you know, all over the world for this book, you know, at first we'd say, okay, you know, we think what you're doing is you're introducing tension, and they would just disagree with us. They said, no, I would never do that. And Sajna Nicole would be charming, and I would be impatient. And eventually, at some point in the conversation, you know, something would click, and these executives would say, okay, let me shut the door. I'll tell you what I really do. And it was like we discovered the dirty little secret of management, that intuitively they were actually raising and lowering tension levels and being quite careful in how they orchestrated things so they could get the best ideas and the best performance out of their people. And once we discovered that, we figured, well, somebody needs to write about this, because these great leaders are doing it naturally and intuitively, and we fundamentally believed that if we would watch what they were doing, that we could share by basis of principles with other leaders, how to get things done in today's complex and very changing world.
All right, you're using a term there that I want to talk about when we come back, and that is introducing tension. When most people think about something called the right fight, I think they think of causing conflict, and there's obviously a difference, and I want to explore that when we come back from our break. My guest is Damon Beyer. He is a co-author of The Right Fight, How Great Leaders Use Healthy Conflict to Drive Performance, Innovation, and Value. And we will continue our conversation with Damon when we come back in a moment to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Now, the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
How much does it cost to keep the federal government closed for just one day? Currently, estimates place the cost at $100 million, but OPM Director John Barry says he's starting to doubt that number. The $100 million a day figure was estimated 20 years ago and didn't take into account all the people who work anyway, emergency personnel or teleworkers. He wants a new calculation for a more accurate estimate. I'm Amy Morris.
With the rates for the federal long-term care program increasing by as much as 25%, there's never been a better time to consider your options. WEPA offers long-term care insurance from several highly rated carriers. These plans offer multiple premium discounts, and certain plans even allows couples to share benefits, which increases flexibility and saves on premium costs. For a personal quote, call 1-800-243-5569 or visit waepaltc.org. That's 1-800-243-5569 or waepaltc.org.
On the move by Be Your Caps Info, Caps Mobile lets you use your mobile phone to stay connected to the Caps. Receive breaking news and special offers delivered right to your phone. Check scores and stats from your phone's web browser. Enter text to win contests for great Caps prizes and much more. To join the Caps Mobile Club, text CAPS to 43803 now. For more info on all Caps Mobile offerings, visit the Fan Zone section of WashingtonCaps.com. Stay Caps connected with Caps Mobile.
The Fed Cloud blog on federalnewsradio.com explores the hard issues surrounding cloud computing from the government's perspective, sharing with you the challenges, opportunities, and lessons learned from some of the top minds in the world of federal IT. Collaborate with others and help shape the discussion on cloud computing at the Fed Cloud blog on federalnewsradio.com or follow the Fed Cloud blog on Twitter, sponsored by Intel and Cisco. Two technology companies leading the cloud revolution.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorbeck. Here's what we're working on for this afternoon's Daily Debrief. Can federal managers and federal employees work together better? That's the idea behind an Obama administration initiative, and we'll talk to an expert who has very high hopes. And the Energy Department CIO, Tom Pike, retiring from government after four decades. We'll have an exit interview, plus an update on your TSP from Tom Trabucco, all that and much more this afternoon, 3 to 7 on the Daily Debrief with Chris Dorabek and Amy Morris, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest for this part of the program is Damon Beyer, co-author of the book, The Right Fight, How Great Leaders Use Healthy Conflict to Drive Performance, Innovation, and Value. And we'll have more information about the book, including how you can get yourself a copy, posted on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later on this hour. Damon, we talked in the first segment of our conversation about introducing tension. And I want you to talk briefly about the difference between introducing tension into an environment and causing conflict. I think when people think about conflict and so forth, they think about pitting one side against another or one person against another in a workplace environment, and that's not at all what you're talking about in this book.
Right. Well, when we sort of looked at the research that we could find and that we could conduct on the subject, we were really shocked to find that the single biggest predictor of poor performance in an organization, if you look 2-3 years out, or in an organizational unit, so even down to the sort of team level, was that employees were happy. meaning that they were complacent with sort of the circumstance. Unfortunately, the second biggest predictor of poor performance in an organization is when people were burnt out or they were completely stressed and overtaxed. And when we thought about it, then we went to the medical community and tried to understand, you know, what was human about what we'd found, was we found that something was very basically human. Athletes don't get great performance out of their bodies unless they put them under stress. But unfortunately, there's this fine line between stress and distress, and if you put yourself under too much stress, you get sick. And so what good leaders need to do is manage sort of tension levels in organizations in a way that keep people performing at optimal levels. That's why you get the cyclical pattern of performance, because, you know, things are really not going well, as we are. We all know in today's economy, and so people struggle really, really hard to sort of make things better. But once they start coasting and things, you know, seem okay, they get complacent, and that sort of lays the seeds for the next kind of downturn. If you look at corporate performance over a period of time, it's really hard to avoid these boom-bust cycles, and we believe, you know, it's because, you know, people are getting complacent, or then people are really, really stressed because performance has been down, and they overcompensate, sort of like, you know, trying to get the water at the right level when you're on the 35th floor of a hotel. And so what we did was we created some principles for people to keep that at a much more level keel, to introduce tension into the organization around substance, not personal or petty issues, but that kept the organization and kept organizational performance on track to constantly improve the way things were going.
And that makes a wonderful segue into where I wanted to go next, which is to talk about those six right fight principles. The first one is make it material. Tell me what that means.
Well, you know, we found three rules for picking right fights. You know, not everything is worth sort of fighting about at work. And make it material was the absolutely first. And it means basically three things. The first, it's got to be big. You know, it's got to have real value for an organization. But in addition to just something that's big, it also needs to have some kind of nature of problem that multiple perspectives can add value to. It's not the kind of thing where you can just call in an expert and figure something out and they'll give you a good enough answer. You know, even if it's big, it really needs out-of-the-box thinking, or what Sasha Nicole called in her first book, exponential thinking. So the combination of really good ideas. And the last thing about materiality is, in order for it to be a real right fight, it ought to affect the way the business or the organization works together, right? It ought to really be redesigning the way that people are coming together to create products, services, value to the organization and to the community at large.
All right, right fight principle two is focus on the future, not the past. You subtitled this one, I think, something in an interesting way. Move beyond blame to possibilities. A lot of organizations, you find people standing there pointing fingers at each other, or who did what wrong.
Yeah, it's amazing. I spent the last like 3-4 years doing lots of senior leadership workshops all around the globe, every continent but Antarctica, and they tried to get me there, but fortunately that didn't work out. I paid attention to what people were, you know, doing from a speech act theory, you know, whether they were in the past, the present, or the future. And much to my surprise, 85% of the time, these senior leadership teams, very large organizations, were spending their time in the past. And that surprised me because, I mean, the role of leaders was to, you know, chart the future. And, you know, there was so much argument about who was responsible for these bad numbers and who are we going to blame for X and Y and Z. And what was important was turning that into what have we learned from the past instead of trying to assign blame. I mean, you can tell the quality of your alignment systems by how productive your conflict is. And if you can't sort of sort that out sort of automatically, then that means you need to go back and work on all those, you know, kumbaya kind of principles of alignment so that you can automatically figure out at the end of a quarter, at the end of a year, who's responsible for poor results. But if you start turning that energy towards creating a better future, one that really creates aspirational vision of where people want to go, then they'll, you know, give you their best, frankly, in terms of their efforts.
Focus on the future, not the past, is right fight principle number two of the six principles. Make it material, number one, and we'll work our way to number three when we return to our conversation with Damon Beyer, co-author of The Right Fight, How Great Leaders Use Healthy Conflict to Drive Performance, Innovation, and Value. Back in just a few minutes on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
I'm Chris Maurer, CNBC Business Radio. Stocks are higher on some positive earnings results. Both Kraft Foods and Abercrombie & Fitch reporting results that beat expectations. Meantime, drug maker Merck says its profits jumped after the company bought its longtime partner, Schering Plough. The Dow's up 125 points, the Nasdaq higher by 22. The National Association of Home Builders says its housing market index rose in February. Analysts take this as a sign that low interest rates and federal tax credits for buyers has boosted confidence in consumer demand. Demand for new homes. Mall owner Simon Property Group says it has made a $10 billion offer to acquire its ailing rival, General Growth Properties. And the Transportation Department is demanding Toyota produce its recall documents. The government wants to find out how and when the Japanese automaker learned of the safety defect and if the recalls were done in a timely manner. Chris Maurer, CNBC Business Radio.
Blurriness, wavy lines, blind spot, these are all symptoms of a chronic condition called wet age-related macular degeneration, also known as wet AMD. It can develop quickly, and it's a leading cause of blindness in people 60 and older. Learn about your risk factors and find out how a retina specialist can help. Just visit amdawareness.org. And if you aren't seeing clearly, get checked now. Knowing the symptoms may save your sight. Learn more at amdawareness.org today. This message was brought to you by the American Society of Retina Specialists and Genentech.
Mommy, I don't feel so good.
Oh, Billy, you do feel warm. Let's take your temperature.
No, Mommy, I don't like that pointy thing in my ear.
It's okay, sweetie. This is the Exergen Temporal Scanner Thermometer. It's better, and it doesn't go in your ear. All I have to do is scan your forehead, just like this.
That's all? I like that thermometer. And?
And you've got a fever. Back to bed, honey.
The Exergen Temporal Scanner, changing the way the world takes temperature. Home model available at Costco.
The Pentagon and beyond. Brought to you by Eric.
U.S. Marines and Afghan troops launched their long-awaited attack over the weekend on the biggest Taliban-held town in the south part of that country. They're seeking to reestablish government control and undermine support for the militants in their own heartland. The attack on Marja is the biggest joint Afghan international offensive of the war. It's the largest combat operation since President Barack Obama ordered 30,000 more U.S. troops there last year to turn the tide of the war. I'm J.J. Green.
Most people can relate to the frustration of losing cell phone coverage while on an important call. But can you imagine a pilot losing coverage with the ground crew while in the air and traveling over water? With 75% of the world being covered by water, this scenario is more possible than you might think. Airlink understands this better than anyone. Airlink has a legacy of solving aviation-related challenges and implementing solutions to ensure that constant communications are available and reliable for every flight, regardless of the location or circumstance. Log on to ARANC.com to learn more.
My name is Deborah Mark. I've been a truck driver for 11 years. I'm good at what I do, and I love it. I also have high blood pressure. I didn't take it seriously, and it got me into trouble.
One in three American adults has high blood pressure. It is a leading cause of heart attack, stroke, and kidney failure.
3 years ago, I was driving to Toledo, Ohio, and I became very sick. So I pulled over on a ramp. My kidneys had shut down. I wound up in the hospital. I could have died. So now I take it very seriously.
High blood pressure is one of our most serious health threats. That's why Novartis is developing new treatments and providing programs that help doctors and patients manage high blood pressure.
I'm doing all the right things now. I eat better. I take my medication every day. I exercise. And this is my second chance.
Novartis. Think what's possible.
Government financial managers are deeply committed to producing timely, reliable, and useful financial information. At the Association of Government Accountants National Leadership Conference, stay on top of issues that affect you. Sessions cover current issues relating to the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, the effects of political transitions, a look at the first year of Obama's presidency, and what the future holds. Join them February 18th and 19th at the Ronald Reagan Building and International Trade Center and show your commitment to a more accountable future. Visit agacgfm.org/NLC.
Welcome back to In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Damon Beyer. He is a co-author of the book, The Right Fight, How Great Leaders Use Healthy Conflict to Drive Performance, Innovation, and Value. And Damon, your book lists six what you call right fight principles. And we covered the first two, make it material, focus on the future, not the past. The third is pursue a noble purpose. And this is kind of the altruistic thing that I think managers go for a lot and maybe fall short on, because both they and some of the folks that they work for are thinking maybe more about the money.
Yeah, this is the hardest one for people to get at times, but it really has to be something that's more than just money. If you're expecting people at all levels of your organization to give you their best ideas and their best information, money doesn't motivate way down at the bottom. You know, when people are talking on the soccer fields about what they do, it's, you know, the quality of the work they do and the nature of the work they do. And so leaders can tap into that if they reframe what they're trying to accomplish in those terms, so that it really encourages people to give their best and they're all.
That is number three on the six right fight principles list. Make it sport, not war. Kind of goes to what you and I talked about in the first two segments, which is we're not trying to introduce butting heads, but the word tension, I think, is a really good tag for this one.
Yeah, the first three principles sort of tell you how to pick the fights, but the last three principles tell you how to fight right. And, you know, there are rules of war and there are rules of sport. Unfortunately, the rules of war generally get dictated by the winner many years later. But when you're in a sort of sporting arena, you know, there's clear rules, so people know, you know, how to play. There's usually a referee that can enforce those rules, and any given team has a chance to win. So it's not a setup or a layup, you know, from one side or the other. And people, you know, when you get into that kind of environment, people are far more willing to engage in the debate.
When they don't feel like everything, the rules are stacked against them and they have no chance to participate and make a difference.
Exactly. And it's hard sometimes for senior leaders to step out of their own point of view. And so sometimes they've got to appoint another referee, right? And make that happen. But having the referee and being neutral and making sure the rules are clear is incredibly important. If you can't do that, it's hard to make these things work well.
All right. The fifth one is, as I read through this, struck me as maybe being kind of generational. It is structure formally, but work informally. And there are a number of different ideas in different organizations about what exactly is formal and informal these days.
Yeah, it's funny because you can tell the formal organization on the org chart, but it's rarely the way things work, if ever the way things work.
Mm-hmm.
And our point here is that you actually want to set these tensions up formally. In the example I gave earlier when we were doing a segment about the head of finance and the head of sales, that's a formal setup where the head of sales sort of wants the quota down and the head of finance wants it up. So you're going to create purposeful misalignments in your organization in such a way that people have advocacy positions. But the last thing in the world you want is for the hierarchy or the silos to take over. You really want people to have those debates from the relationships and the influence they have. And more importantly, you want them to bring information and facts, not just their position, to the argument, so that they're getting the best information they possibly can from up and down the hierarchy. And the only way to do that is to work the informal organization, or basically the network of personal relationships and trust-based relationships that exist.
All right, quick side note, because you mentioned silos, and that's something that comes up in government operations all the time. If I'm in a situation where I know it's important to break out of that mold, and I'm having trouble getting buy-in, or there are some kind of organizational restrictions that are in place, any shortcuts that you've found to kind of cut through that to break that silo situation?
Yeah, generally, if you can find one or two people a couple of levels down in the organization that are willing to work with you, right, we call them brokers or hubs in the organization, by, you know, analyzing the informal, who can actually get things done here, that's the key to breaking the hierarchy, is to find people that are incredibly influential, not necessarily visible on the org chart, but that can work the system for you and with you.
All right, that is number five, structure formally, but work informally. And the sixth one is turn pain into gain. What's that all about?
Well, you know, we're not being Pollyanna-ish here. There are going to be winners and losers in these arguments. Not everyone can win. But the way the losers feel about how things transpired is going to determine whether or not they're willing to go to bat again the next time. And so great leaders have to make sure that they practice a speech I don't agree with you. This is what we're going to do, but I've heard you. Mm-hmm. Right? They have to make sure that all outcomes are honored, that risk taking is honored, and that, you know, there aren't pejorative penalties for losing in this kind of a debate. We talked about the GE succession at the very early part of the book, where Jack Welch was picking his successor, and you know, he could only pick one CEO, but the other two men went on to be CEOs at other sorts of organizations. And you can't always have a different kind of plum to offer your folks, but you have to keep in mind that you're doing this and you're structuring it so that they can grow and they can stretch their skills, and you're going to reward the fact that they, you know, played with you and that they played well.
All right. What is the number one mistake as you go into organizations and they're paying you money to tell them what they could do better? What's mistake number one when it comes to the principles that we've just talked about?
They generally are fighting about the wrong things. People think that they can suppress conflict in organizations, and it's almost always under the table because no one is acknowledging that they really should be debating a few things and getting rid of all of the wrong fights. So the single biggest thing I could do when I go into an organization is get rid of all the petty bickering, which is sometimes, you know, fixing the alignment system, but most importantly, it's setting your compass and your focus on the things that really, really matter and getting the energy focused around resolving those issues or those ideas instead of allowing things to generate into parking lot or corner office arguments.